If you're looking for a way to help birds or take your support to the next level, this May, I would love for you to join the Birds Canada Birdathon. It's easy to participate in and helps raise thousands of dollars for bird conservation. Learn more at birdscanada.org/birdathon. Now let's get to the episode. You're listening to The Warblers, a Birds Canada podcast. I'm Andrea Gress.
And I am Andres Jimenez.
Join us as we travel on common flight paths with our guests, gaining insights and inspiration from the world of birds and bird conservation in Canada. On this week's episode of The Warblers, we are learning all about dinosaurs and their connection to birds. Are birds dinosaurs? When did feathers emerge? Our producer, Jody Allaire, is going to be chatting with Francois Theron from the Royal Tyrrell Museum in Drumheller to get all of the juicy details.
Welcome, Jody.
Hey, Andrea. Hey, Andres. Great to be here with you guys.
Yeah, it's really exciting to have you. And I'm excited about this episode because there's some good stuff coming. You were the one who really wanted to do an episode about dinosaurs and birds. Could you tell us about like what you want to get out of this one?
Yeah, you know, this is a topic I've always loved for years and years and years. I think it's just so fascinating that, you know, the species that we all work on, like birds, you know, have this incredible connection to dinosaurs. And I loved dinosaurs as a kid, and learning that, you know, birds are really in many ways just the living descendants of dinosaurs is, I just can't get enough of this story. So it's pretty exciting to be able to talk to someone who knows a lot about the subject.
You mean your inner dino-loving kid who never died can't get enough of this topic?
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. I still feel like I'm a big kid, but especially when we get to talk about dinosaurs, there's just something about dinosaurs, eh? It's just a subject that I think is so fascinating, learning so much more about our distant natural history, right? I just love it. And I love the modern connection of it. And it's just such a great example of how, you know, evolution and natural selection work, right? I love this topic, and I'm really glad you guys were all for having an episode about it.
Yeah, so for this episode, you're going to chat with Francois Theron at the Royal Tyrrell Museum in Drumheller. And the two of you essentially just geek out about dinosaurs, and I love it.
Yeah, so I'll give a quick little introduction to Dr. Francois Theron. So I've known Francois for several years. He's the curator of dinosaur paleoecology at the Royal Tyrrell Museum of Paleontology in Drumheller, Alberta. And Francois studies a whole bunch of really interesting aspects of dinosaurs, but he really is interested in looking at how animals behaved when they were alive, especially prehistoric animals, and what the world they lived in would have looked like. He's done tons of research on the feeding behavior of carnivorous dinosaurs, the environments and climate in which extinct animals lived. He's got no shortage of research highlights, but the one I think is really pertinent to this episode is that he was part of a team that discovered the very first feathered dinosaurs from North America. So yeah, he's a great, great person to talk to you about this topic.
All right, let's listen to Jody Allaire's interview with Dr. Francois Theron. Here we go.
Hey, welcome to the Warblers podcast, Francois.
Thanks for having me.
So look, let's get started by, why don't you tell us about some of the research you do?
Okay, well, my specialty is what we call paleoecology. So it's the study of trying to reconstruct the behavior and the lifestyle of extinct animals. My particular interest is dinosaurs, but I'm interested not only as looking at their bones to know which species is related to which one and is that a new species or not. I'm more interested to reconstruct how these animals were alive. So what were they doing as living creatures 75 million years ago, for example. So I'm interested in, by studying their bones, their anatomy, trying to reconstruct their lifestyle, their feeding behavior for predators, their bite force, how they capture their prey. But I'm also interested in trying to reconstruct the world in which these animals live. So by looking at the rocks where we find these fossils, we can actually learn a lot about the habitats and the climate, the temperature, the amount of rainfall. Were they living in wetlands? Were they living in deserts? So that type of things, trying to flesh out these animals beyond the bones and trying to reconstruct the world in which they lived and what were these animals doing at the time when they were alive.
Oh, that's so amazing. I have just countless other questions. I would love to talk to you about this line of work and research because it's really just incredible. But our focus is to talk about the bird-dinosaur connection. I'm hoping you can help explain to us the relationship, you know, between birds and dinosaurs and how birds really evolved. One of the groups of dinosaurs that you like to work on are theropod dinosaurs that play a prominent role in the evolution of birds. Could you maybe explain to us what exactly a theropod dinosaur is?
Theropods are a group of dinosaurs that include all the meat-eating dinosaurs and their close relatives. So that group includes famous characters like T-Rex, Allosaurus, Spinosaurus, and even Velociraptor of Jurassic Park fame. So theropods are animals that walked on two legs, and most of them had sharp teeth and sharp claws to capture prey, because those meat-eating dinosaurs, those theropods, they were almost all of them were predators. However, there are some groups of theropods that have lost their teeth and have evolved beaks instead. So we think that those theropods may have been instead herbivorous or omnivorous. So this means either they ate plants or they ate plants mixed in with flesh and other things. So that's the case of some groups of theropods that we call the ornithomimids or the ostrich mimic dinosaurs, and more cassowary-like dinosaurs called the oviraptorids. Now, these animals, we call them as ostrich-like or cassowary-like, but they're not related to those modern birds. That's what we call a case of parallel evolution, that similar features evolved independently in groups that are distantly related. Because in nature, there's usually very few ways to do something right. There's usually one way to do something right, and different animals will evolve that same shape over and over again because it works so well. So that's the case of the ostrich mimic dinosaurs and the cassowary-like dinosaurs. They probably did something very similar to what modern paleognathes do, but they're not related to modern birds. So it's a case of basically evolving very superficial similarities, but those animals are not closely related.
Okay, so why don't we just jump into like the million-dollar question? When exactly did birds evolve, and how did that come about?
Well, based on what we know from the fossil record, looks like the first birds evolved about 150 million years ago, during a time period called the Late Jurassic. So the first birds had four wings. That may come as a surprise to many listeners, but the very first birds had four wings. They had obviously wings on their forelimbs, but they also had long feathers on their legs that formed leg wings. So it's believed that those first wings would have helped the first birds, the primitive birds, to generate enough lift so they could stay aloft and actually start flying. But with time, and probably as birds start evolving new adaptations, better adaptations to flap their arm wings, that's when the leg wings start getting smaller. The feathers got shorter, and eventually they fully disappeared. By about 125 million years ago, in a time period we call the early Cretaceous, all birds at that time only had two wings. So it's similar to the evolution of planes. We started with biplanes that had basically the equivalent of four wings, but as the design improved and the wings were capable of generating more lift, planes started being built with only two wings because there was enough lift generated with two wings. So it looks like birds may have gone through a similar stage in their early evolution.
Did feathers evolve then in theropod dinosaurs before what we think of as a traditional bird? And when did that turn into actual flight?
For the longest time, the presence of feathers was thought to be the key feature that differentiated birds from dinosaurs. Birds had feathers and dinosaurs had scales because they're reptiles, so they can't have feathers. But all that changed in 1996 with the discovery of the first fossils of small dinosaurs, small meat-eating dinosaurs, that actually were fully covered in feathers. And we're talking about modern-looking feathers with a central rachis and even veins. So from those discoveries, it became clear that modern feathers had first evolved in dinosaurs and birds must have inherited those features from their dinosaurian ancestor. So since then, I'd say hundreds, possibly thousands of fossils of feathered dinosaurs have been discovered, mostly in a little area of China called the province of Liaoning. But there's also a spotty occurrences of feathered dinosaurs all around the world. And based on those fossils, we see that first of lots of meat-eating dinosaurs were covered in feathers, but also we see the history, the evolutionary history of feathers. We see that in more primitive theropods, those that are more distantly related to birds, feathers were very, very simple. And by that, we mean that there, some people call them dino fuzz, because it looks like when you look at the fossil, it looks like the fossils are surrounded by a fuzz. But the feathers, if you look at them under a microscope, you can see they're very simple hair-like features. In fact, they're very, very similar to down feathers. Very simple, unbranched feather that looked like a little filament, like a little hair. And it's believed that those first feathers were probably used for insulation to keep the animal warm. And then as we look at fossils of theropods, we can see that as the theropods become more evolved, they became more advanced, closer and closer to birds. That's when we see that feathers started becoming more and more complex. They started as little filaments that looked like down feathers, and then they evolved more complex features. They evolved arachis, they evolved barbules, they evolved little barbules to form veins on modern feathers, and then eventually full-blown modern feathers were present in theropods that are very closely related to birds, but that are not, clearly not birds. So it's telling us that, yeah, birds, feathers are extremely widespread in the evolution of theropods. And some paleontologists even think that very primitive feathers, like the down-like feathers, may even have been present in the ancestor of all dinosaurs. So it's showing that actually feathers are probably not, clearly not the unique feature of birds. It's actually first, they actually first evolved among dinosaurs, and only later with time did birds inherit those feathers from their dinosaurian ancestors. And as of today, we know of the presence of feathers based on fossils. We know that at least 60 different species of meat-eating dinosaurs that possessed feathers. So we see that it's not just a fluke. It's not just a few theropods that had feathers. It looks like most of them, if not all of them, actually had feathers.
Oh, this is incredible. So what we're seeing, I guess, if I can interpret what you're saying, is that, you know, the growth between like having hair-like hollow barbs or down plumes to all the way to asymmetrical flight feather design, all of that really happened within dinosaurs before birds were actually birds?
That's absolutely right. Yeah, we see the clear evolution that feathers start very simple and then evolve to become, as you said, asymmetrical flight feathers. The question is, what were those feathers used for? And what is the evolution of flight? How did animals that are basically ground-dwelling animals start flying? And there's a lot of debate about how flight began. There's three main theories to explain, that attempt to answer how flight first began. One scenario is what we call the bottom-down scenario, where it's hypothesized that it's probably small tree-dwelling theropods that start using their feathers first for parachuting down trees, then through time and with evolution, start gliding from tree to tree, and eventually learn to flap their wings and could actually start flying. There's another scenario that's called the bottom-up scenario that postulates that flight first evolved among ground-dwelling theropods that had to jump maybe to capture their prey or to run away from predators or something. And then they learned that by flapping their wing, they could actually jump a little bit higher. And then with time and evolution again, basically that flapping motion allowed the theropod to jump higher and higher, longer distances, and eventually could that translated into powered flight. And then there's a third scenario that's is a slight modification on the second scenario, on the bottom-up scenario. And that's been observed by studying modern birds, for example, species of mostly ground-dwelling birds like chukar, partridges, turkey, even pigeons, and birds that are capable of flying but actually spend a lot of time on the ground. And it was discovered, especially in very young birds, that before they are very good at flying, they actually flap their wings, but it's not to generate lift to take off, but it's rather to push themselves down against the ground. So they gain better traction when they try to run away from a predator. And that even allows them to climb up tree trunks that are oriented 90 degrees from horizontal. They just flap their wings that increase tractions on the ground, and that allows those birds to actually climb up on a vertical obstacle to run away from a predator. So those scientists have proposed that maybe that's how flight began. Now, those scenarios explain how flight could have began, but it doesn't answer the question of why did wings evolve in the first place? And the answer to why did wings first of all comes from the study of dinosaurs. About 10 years ago, I was involved in a study that described the first feathered dinosaurs from North America. And those were discovered from here in Alberta. And we found that those were species of ostrich mimic dinosaurs. So fairly large animal that are as large, if not larger, than modern day ostriches. So they're definitely too big to fly. But we see that the adult ostrich mimic dinosaurs had wings, whereas the young ones that were at least a year old still did not have wings. So from that, we inferred that wings probably developed with sexual maturity. So when the animal went through a phase of puberty, if you want to call it in human terms, when they reached sexual maturity, they started growing those wings on those on their forelimbs. And the wings were then probably used for courtship and display, try to attract a mate, maybe for brooding, for try to scare away a predator, anything that's related to display and courtship. So with proposed then that probably that's why wings first evolved. They evolved for displaying courtship, and it's only later on in evolutionary time that those wings were used for other purposes, were co-opted for other purposes, and eventually one of those purposes was flight. So wings first evolved just to show off, to try to impress a mate. But later in time, theropods realized that, hey, with those big feathers on my arms, I can do something else. And that actually can generate lift. So we're probably back down to basically either the bottom up or the modified bottom up scenario where wings could have allowed these animals to generate lift and eventually take flight.
It really seems like feathers singularly play a very key role in a whole bunch of evolutionary adaptations with dinosaurs, like from warmth to display, and then even almost inadvertently to flight. That's really interesting that structure, is so dynamic.
We'll be right back.
How do you like your coffee, Andre? Cream? Sure?
I like mine bird-friendly, certified.
Then I have just the brew for you. Birds and Beans coffee roasters only use beans from farmers who keep the native forest habitat intact, growing coffee in the shade of a variety of native trees.
That's good for migratory birds.
Good for everyone. This coffee is even certified by the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center. It protects biodiversity, supports sustainable farming, and it's fur trade, and organic too.
Ah, not to mention delicious.
Deliciously bird-friendly. If any of our listeners also like their coffee bird-friendly certified, here's how to get it. Order online at birdsandbeans.ca/warblers. Make sure to use the /warblers because that means Birds and Beans will also donate 10% of the purchase price to support this podcast. You can also use the link on your podcast player.
Sounds great. Andreas, how about another cup?
Let's do it.
We're talking a lot about feathers because, you know, that's really is one of the main connectors, right, with birds and theropod dinosaurs. But I did want to ask you, are there some other shared characteristics that link theropod dinosaurs and modern birds in addition to feathers?
There's many anatomical features, but there's also behaviors that are shared between the two. For example, if you look at the anatomy of birds, we see that, for example, the hollow bones, the three-toed feet, even the air sacs in the respiratory system, all those features that we see in birds are also found in the meat-eating dinosaurs. And we also see even brooding behavior where the parent sits on the clutch and warms up the nest to incubate the eggs. Those behaviors also first evolved among meat-eating dinosaurs, because we find fossils of meat-eating dinosaurs that have been preserved, have been buried while they were sitting on their clutch trying to keep the eggs warm. So we see that there's a lot of similarities between birds and dinosaurs. And the only way we can explain just the sheer amount of similarities that we see between the two is to basically say that, yeah, birds are not only, did not only evolve for dinosaurs from dinosaurs, but birds are dinosaurs, the same way that we can say humans are mammals. So that's a really key feature of paleontology, that a key discovery of paleontology, I should say, that we've learned over the past, I'd say, 30 to 50 years, that actually birds are dinosaurs, and they're just a highly specialized type of dinosaurs that have learned to fly and that are still alive today.
I loved dinosaurs as a kid, and it, you know, quickly switched to birds. But I'm really hearing that I actually didn't make the switch at all. I've been on Team Dinosaur my entire life, so that's kind of cool. Francois, I want to ask you about Archaeopteryx. Some of our listeners are probably familiar with the 150 million year old fossil of Archaeopteryx. It's in almost any book about dinosaurs, and it's that classic image of a small looking dinosaur with a bent neck and very clear, you know, feathers coming off the limbs and tail. And I wanted to ask you about Archaeopteryx specifically, is that at 150 million old, that would place it in the Jurassic period, is that the oldest known bird, or is it considered a species that is transitional between birds and theropod dinosaurs? Or maybe it's too impossible because it's been such a gradual change. So how do you place Archaeopteryx?
As you mentioned, yeah, Archaeopteryx is probably, put aside your T-Rex and Triceratops, I think Archaeopteryx is probably the most famous fossil ever discovered. As you can see, it's a gorgeous specimen, at least the Berlin specimen that we see in the natural history in Berlin, where, as you said, it's a bent neck animal with all the wing feathers splayed out. So that's probably one of the most beautiful dinosaur fossil ever discovered. Well, I call it dinosaur because birds are dinosaurs. So.
Fully agree with that, Francois. Yeah.
But I'd say that nowadays, generally, Archaeopteryx is generally considered the earliest known bird. If you look at the fossil, you can see that Archaeopteryx was fully covered with feathers that are in all ways identical to modern feathers. We have the asymmetrical flight feathers. We have symmetrical feathers covering the body. We have the flight feathers on the wings. So from the outside, if we were to look at the animal as it was alive, it would clearly have looked like a bird. But if you look at the details, the skeletal anatomy, the skeleton of the animal, you can see that it's also very similar to small meat-eating dinosaurs. It still had teeth. It had a very long bony tail. It had a hand with three fingers with claws. So Archaeopteryx represents the perfect transitional animal where one could say, okay, we're dealing with a primitive bird, but it's clearly evolved from a theropod. Archaeopteryx sits at the base of a group that we called aves, which means in Latin birds, because that's where it was classified when it was first discovered in the 1850s. However, I'd say in the last 15 years or so, there's been lots of new feathered dinosaurs that have been discovered that actually, when you analyze them, you realize that they are more primitive than Archaeopteryx, but they're still more closely related to birds than they are to any other type of meat-eating dinosaurs, like Velociraptor, for example. So some paleontologists have suggested that maybe we should broaden what our definition of a bird is in order to include these slightly more primitive theropods covered with feathers. They have wings, they have asymmetrical flight feathers, they have wings on their forelimbs and on their legs. So some people say that we should expand our definition of birds to include those animals and call them avialans. To this day, I think most paleontologists still consider Archaeopteryx as being the first bird. We have to put the dot somewhere. As you mentioned, so many fossils of transitional animals have shown that actually going from a theropod to a bird is a very gradual process. It wasn't a sudden jump that you say, okay, in this animal, this is where we see the big difference. This is a theropod. This is clearly a bird. Most people still consider Archaeopteryx as being the earliest known bird.
One of the topics that I think is particularly interesting when we're looking at the evolution of birds, especially within the Cretaceous period, is that they survived the KT extinction, the big dinosaur extinction at the end of the Cretaceous period. And whereas all other sort of larger dinosaurs did not make it through, how did birds make it through that when other even very similar dinosaurs did not?
That's a very interesting question. If we were to jump in a time machine and go back 67 million years ago to the very end of the age of the dinosaurs, we'd see, and we look up in the sky, we'd see there would have been a lot of different birds species flying out, and they would have been extremely diverse. Of course, birds were not the only animals that could fly at the time. There were also the pterosaurs, the flying reptiles. Lots of people often call flying dinosaurs, but they're not dinosaurs. They're clearly closely related to dinosaurs, but they're a different type of reptile. So that includes animals such as Quetzalcoatlus, Pteranodon, Pterodactyls, and things like that. So those would have been truly the master of the skies. But at the smaller body size, there would have been a lot of birds flying up in the sky. And see that birds would have been extremely diverse with types of birds that are no longer alive today. You would have seen birds with teeth, birds with beaks, birds that could swim like loons but had totally lost their wings. And then you'd see some birds that were, if you look at them really quickly, you'd see it's a modern bird, but they're not quite there yet. But then you'd find just a minority of species, just very few of them, that would actually qualify as being true representatives of the modern bird lineages. For example, we have evidence that the ancestors of paleognathes, so tinamous and ostriches, the ancestors of ducks and fowls, and the ancestors of all other modern birds that we call neoavies would have been there, but they would have been extremely rare because the skies were dominated by other groups of birds. Then if we fast forward to about 66 million years ago, that's when we have a large mass extinction, the Cretaceous Paleogene mass extinction, that we think is related to a combination of climate change, but also, and probably predominantly, a big meteorite impact that occurred somewhere in the, that we call the Chicxulub meteorite, that collided with the Earth somewhere in the Yucatan Peninsula in modern day Mexico. And because of that impact, there were tremendous and catastrophic environmental disturbances that led to the extinction of, on one hand, all non-bird dinosaurs, but also of lots of other types of animals, both on land and in the oceans. And believe it or not, birds were also among the casualties. It's estimated that about 90% of bird species went extinct at the Cretaceous Paleogene mass extinction. We have entire lineages of birds that were totally wiped out. And then we just had a few species that survived. So the survivors are usually were usually small species, smaller animals. There were species that also did not live in trees. They were lived either on land or possibly by the water. And they also had beaks instead of teeth. So all the species with teeth went extinct. So why were those characteristics key for those birds to survive, whereas all other birds went extinct? Well, that's probably due to the nature of the devastation after the impact. That basically, after the meteorite impact, there was a big fire blast that went around the world, or at least over the Americas, and totally burned down all the forests. And then the meteorite also catapulted up in the atmosphere a lot of dust that formed a shroud around the Earth, blocking the sun rays for at least 10 years. So that greatly reduced the amount of photosynthesis that could happen. So all the trees died. You only had the small ferns and small plants that could grow. So that's why all the tree-dwelling birds went extinct. The only birds, the only species of birds that could survive were those that could live on the ground or close to waterways or lakes and find food there. And also, because there weren't that many trees anymore, they were just small plants, well, species that had beaks and could feed on seeds or other hard food elements, those are the species that survived. And then there was also a selection for smaller species, because the bigger you are, the more food you need. So the smaller you are, the less food you need. And basically in hard times, yeah, that was probably advantageous for survivors. And we see the same thing among other land-dwelling animals across the Cretaceous-Paleogene mass extinction. We can see that if you were a small animal, meaning that you weighed less than 44 pounds, and you were a generalist, meaning you weren't a finicky eater, you could eat either a mixture of everything, you weren't a strict plant eater or a strict meat eater, then odds are that you would survive. But if you were bigger than 44 pounds and you had this very strict diet, then odds were that you would go extinct. So we see a parallel with birds, whereas if you are a small and meat-eating animal and you could feed on hard objects that would be hard for species without beaks to eat, then that's probably why that these species survive. And then from those survivors evolved all of the modern bird lineages that we see today. So that's what we call an explosive radiation, that there's very few survivors, but because the ecosystem is empty, all the ecological niches that were occupied by other animals before the KPG mass extinction were now vacant. They were now open. So the survivors were able to just diversify and radiate into all those ecological niches and evolve into all the modern birds that we have today.
You often hear people talking about, you know, sharks. You know, sharks are like the perfect design. So it's been around for hundreds of millions of years, virtually unchanged. And crocodilians, you know, it's sort of, they nailed it early on and they've sort of kept their survivors. They can survive those type of big extinction events. It sounds to me like we need to be talking about birds in the same realm. It seems like birds and feathers really made them adaptable. And I think they definitely deserve our respect. Like, it's really impressive what they've had to go through and how they evolved. It's really just an incredible story. And I hope one of the takeaways is for people listening to you, understanding that, you know, birds are absolutely remarkable. They deserve more attention from us, and especially a lot more in the conservation realm. I do want to ask you one last question. So there's so much to this story of the bird-dinosaur connection and how birds evolve. What is the significance for you as a paleontologist?
Well, as a paleontologist, I think it shows us that dinosaurs are not extinct. They're still alive today. In fact, dinosaurs are the most diverse group of vertebrates alive on Earth nowadays. Well, if you exclude fish that live in the ocean, but if you mean like living on land or in the air, birds are the most diverse groups of vertebrates today. There's what, over 10,000 species of birds alive today versus only 6,000 species of mammals. So clearly we're still living in a world of dinosaurs. It's just that now the dinosaurs are really specialized. They're just basically those beautiful flying animals. And then, so as a paleontologist, I think it gives you a better appreciation for dinosaurs, because you can see we still have relatives today. And knowing that from animals, small meat-eating dinosaurs, we had the evolution of one of the most important groups of vertebrates we have today. So it's really interesting to know, why is a bird a bird? Or why are birds the way they are? And that's because they inherited, so not to say that everything that's a bird came from theropods first. Obviously, modern birds evolved their own thing, but there's many characteristics that birds just inherited from their dinosaur and ancestor. And at the same time, studying modern birds can give us information about the biology and the lifestyle of extinct dinosaurs. For example, it's only recently that we discovered that lots of meat-eating dinosaurs had air sacs and probably had a respiratory system or breathing system very similar to those of birds, because we see lots of air sacs. If you look at the skeletons of birds, you can see that their lungs have all those pouches going into their bones that allows them to breathe in a very efficient way. Whether they inhale or exhale, birds always have fresh oxygen going through their lungs. That's quite superior to the breathing style of mammals like us. When you inhale air, you have fresh oxygen, but when you exhale, you just spew out air that's impoverished in oxygen. But birds, whether they inhale or exhale, they always have fresh oxygen going through their lungs. So we discovered that the same breathing system was also present in theropods and meat-eating dinosaurs. So that allows us to see, by studying at birds, we can actually infer the biology and the lifestyle of extinct dinosaurs. Knowing more about the information, the lifestyle of modern birds actually allows us to reconstruct the lifestyle of extinct dinosaurs. So I think that's the big point for paleontologists, their interest in modern birds.
I love that. I love that connection. I think that's such a great way to end this, is the connection between, you know, looking at the behavior of modern birds to help piece together mysteries from the past with dinosaurs, and vice versa, looking at the origin of some of these theropod dinosaurs to understand modern birds better. I also love the idea of when you're looking outside at the birds in your yard or in your local park, you're basically out dinosaur watching. I think 10-year-old me is high-fiving myself at the moment here. I think that's a pretty amazing realization to come to that. And so really, we should probably be changing the name of Birds Canada to Avian Theropod Dinosaurs Canada. I don't know. I'm not sure if that's going to quite work. But Francois, thank you so much for spending time with us today and for telling us all about your work and this amazing connection between birds and dinosaurs.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back.
The Warblers is a podcast of Birds Canada. Our goal is to bring you the information you need to discover, enjoy, and protect birds. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, leave a review, and share this podcast with everyone you know. Birds Canada relies on the support of donors like you. To learn more or to make a donation, visit birdscanada.org. And if you give, please note the podcast in the comment box.
Wow, that was a fantastic interview, Jody. That was so interesting. And I think this is a good time to go into our, you know, highlights and bombshells and the things that we got from that interview. I was particularly shocked to find out, first of all, the answer to the main question we've all had, that birds are indeed dinosaur and that we never stop loving dinosaurs. And then we became dino watchers instead of bird watchers. And so that was fantastic. But then to find out that birds used to have four wings, that was super, super cool. And that the way they were using the wings first, one of the theories was to get more thrust when they ran. That was incredible.
Yeah, I love Dr. Tarian's comparison to airplanes, how airplanes evolved.
Oh, that was awesome. Yeah, it made me thought of dragonflies as well. And then bees that have four sets of wings, and then flies, they only have one pair. And so that was incredible.
Yeah, I love that you guys are pumped about the subject matter now. It is so fascinating, isn't it? There's so many really great things that Francois had to say. And I really like that, you know, when we think of feathers, we think of birds, right? Birds, like, totally linked to feathers. And I really love the conversation that, you know, feathers evolved before birds,
yeah.
You know, before what we think of as modern birds existed, and that, you know, feathers had a different purpose at first before flight, you know, for thermoregulation and for display, and feathers, you know, did all sorts of things. They're sort of like the, you know, the Leatherman or Swiss Army knife of external adaptations, right? Like it's
the Swiss Army knife for sure.
Yeah, it's I think that's just a really cool thing that feathers have been around for so long.
And that not just feathers, but dinosaurs had so many other similarities with modern day birds. That was really fascinating to me.
Yeah, Judy, which are the main takeaways when it comes to which are the similarities between dinos and birds? What are the things that we learn that birds have in common with dinosaurs?
Yeah, well, I think there's several things, right? Like, I think, like, obviously feathers is the one. Adaptations to form a beak, you know, are another that predate modern birds. The whole, you know, skeletal structure, being bipedal, having a wishbone, there's all, you know, air sacs, you know, there's all sorts of things. And the list of things that are similar between, you know, birds and dinosaurs, it's so tight that there's actually, and I think we talked about this, right? It's almost really difficult to pinpoint, like,
where they are different.
Yeah, where they are different. When is the theropod dinosaur specifically? So those bipedal carnivorous dinosaurs become birds, because it's been such a gradual change over time. I think we don't see birds without their feathers too often. If you look at like a golden eagle or something, you know, the skeleton of it, you know, or if you see birds, you don't realize their legs, like how big their legs are. And they actually do look like a tiny, you know, velociraptor with a beak without teeth. I think the feathers sort of mask the dinosaur-ness of birds.
The dinosaur-ness, that's wicked. What is it that you want to accomplish from exploring this link between birds and dinosaurs?
You know, for me, you know, as someone who's, you know, a biologist and who's, you know, always been interested in dinosaurs as well, I love looking at the origins and the evolutionary history of anything, right? I think that story of how things change and evolve over time is always a fascinating story. And we learn a lot. Birds, in a very real sense, they're actually, you know, can be considered avian theropod dinosaurs. They have changed, but they really, in a broader evolutionary look, are still kind of dinosaurs. And I love that. That's such a game changer, you know, in terms of my perspective on when I look at a bird and what I think now is I think of something that actually, you know, evolved much longer ago than we originally imagined.
What about you, Andrea?
Oh, man, I gotta be honest. I never knew that much about the birds and the dinosaurs prior to this conversation. And I really enjoyed learning about it. And I think it speaks to just how much we're constantly learning. The fact that we didn't definitively prove the feather connection until 1996. Like, that's our lifetimes, guys. That's, you know, that's unreal.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a teenager by then. The one thing that really struck me, I used to work with sea turtles and I've worked with snakes for a long time. And the biggest argument we used to use when it came to sea turtle conservation was that leatherbacks were older than dinosaurs, that they had barely changed since the time of dinosaurs, same as crocodiles. And it suddenly hit me that the same thing is for birds, that birds were dinosaurs too, and that they have been in the world for so long, so much longer than us, and yet they are at risk because of our existence and activity. And they have earned their space among us and here in this world, and it's important for us to remember it. They survived the extinction of the dinosaurs, and I hope they survive the extinction generated by humans, and I'm going to work very hard for that to happen.
Yeah. Wow.
Well said. Yeah, absolutely. They deserve all living things deserve our respect, for sure. But I think, I hope that when people hear this story or learn more about this story, you know, I hope people maybe develop even a little bit more respect for birds and the journey they've been on, and that they're older than we realize, which is pretty great.
Jody, thank you for that remarkable interview. Until next time, this is another episode of The Warblers. Go Dino Watch, everyone. Go Dino Watch.
Yeah, go Dino Watch. All right. Thanks for having me, you two.
The Warblers is produced by Andres Jimenez, Jody Allaire, Andrea Grest, Ruth Friendship Keller, and Kate Dolish. This episode was edited by Greg McLaughlin and engineered by Katie Zhang, with the music by Jose Mora and art by Alex Nico. Until next time, keep birding.